Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Oh, hello. Good afternoon, everybody. Nice to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon, May the 6th, 2025. Nice to have you aboard on a shortened, abridged version of the Rooster on the Radio, along with AMAC on the other side of the glass. AMAC said, dude, I don't want to listen to you for 3 hours. I can't handle another 3 hours. Let's do two. So I said, okay, let's do two. So we'll do two. We're only with you until 3:05 today because Nats on Deck with Charlie Slow's Dave Jagler comes your way at that point, as does both, not just one, both games of the Nationals and the Guardians doubleheader back-to-back style. Single gate admission. This is a big, big thing. People don't realize how big of a day this is for the Nationals. It's been, by my recollection and by any evidence that I've been able to find, it's been years since the Nationals had a traditional one admission, not split gate doubleheader. It's been years. I could not find any evidence of one in all the schedule looking. Now, maybe I missed one, but I don't remember it because it's been a big deal for me. While many other teams have had, including the Mets and teams in the division, have had traditional doubleheaders where one admission gets you in to both games, the Nationals have always, for as long as I can remember, maybe originally they used to do it differently, for as long as I can remember, they have done it split day-night style. Two admissions, because they didn't want to lose the gate. Even if there was 8,000 people going to one of the games, they didn't care. It was 8,000 people that they didn't have to either give a ticket refund to or that they could get in the ballpark. And the thought was, hey, man, 8,000 people buying, you know, 8,000 beers or sodas, hot dogs, popcorn, peanuts, ice cream, souvenirs. It's worth it. And I don't blame them for that. I mean, it's frustrating. It's frustrating to the consumer, to the fan, because that's how I grew up. I mean, I grew up going, I mean, they were scheduled doubleheaders at Shea Stadium in New York. And I remember one day, oh my gosh, it was the middle of August. I was maybe like 11 or 12, and it was 100 degrees. And I made my dad, my stepdad, dad, stay for the entire doubleheader. And the Mets lost both games. He was pissed. It was, again, 100 degrees. People were just fitzing all over the place. And it sucked. But I got to see two baseball games for the price of one.
Did you ride the Metro back? Or no. were you were driving?
Yeah, we were
driving. I should have known better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your nose is always in the air.
Yeah, you're right. Exactly. I mean, I parked my Rolls Royce right outside the stadium.
Yeah, right. And probably like a marked spot.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Private spot with, like, you know, chains, like, cordoning it off and all that stuff so that nobody could get near it. Anyway, my point being is, today, one admission gets you both games. So it starts at 3:35, game two, roughly about a half an hour after game one. Of course, last night was postponed. It was initially delayed. They waited about an hour and 10 minutes or so. And I would say just after 8 o'clock, Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler came on the radio and made the announcement about today. I think this is this is how it should be handled. The learners certainly have no problem putting food on the table. This is how it should be handled. Give a bone to your most diehard, ardent supporters. And they haven't done this in a long, long time. I don't know the exact date. I don't know when the last time. But every makeup turn doubleheader that I can recall that I've done research on, and maybe I missed one. So if somebody knows the answer to this that I don't, please, by all means, 301-230-0980. But they are going to have a traditional one-admission doubleheader. And again, it's a beautiful day out. In case you haven't been outside yet, it's right around 70 degrees. You got the Caps and the Canes going game one tonight at 7 o'clock. So maybe some of you might have tickets, you know, certainly for that. And you can't do both or whatever the situation is. But if you have the opportunity to get down here to the Navy Yard for a 3:35 start, or even if you waddle in, you know, at 4:30 or whatever, you're still going to see the better part of two games for one price, for one admission. And that is something that should be recognized and should be commended, because they haven't done it anytime recently by memory or by fact check that I can tell. And recently, I mean years. So again, unless I'm missing one. Now, they've done it on the road, but not here. And it used to drive me crazy because, again, that's how I grew up. Single admission, single price, single entry, traditional doubleheader, one after another, about 30, 35 minutes or so after game one ends, boom. So, again, I know it sounds like a criticism. It's really not. Trust me, you know when I'm criticizing people. This is commending the Nationals for doing the right thing. For doing the right thing. However the ticket exchanges get done between last night and all that, beyond me. I don't care enough about that. What I'm talking about is, again, not charging people and not playing a game at noon and playing a game at 7 or 7:30 tonight so that you can clean out the ballpark, get everybody out, and refire up the pits and get everybody back in the ballpark that goes to both games, or, again, people that go to one game can't go to the second game, vice versa, what have you. That's the wrong way to do it. The right way to do it is how they're doing it today. So kudos to them. I want to make sure right off the bat we get to that, because that is important. Coming up at 2 o'clock, we are going to be joined by the radio and television voice of the Carolina Hurricanes, Mike Maniscalco. That is a guy that is not only the broadcast voice of the Carolina Hurricanes. Apologize, had to sneeze. Fighting that for a minute or so. He's not only the voice of the television and radio voice of the Carolina Hurricanes, but he's also my college broadcast partner at Buffalo State University. That's right. We used to travel the highways and the byways of upstate New York and into Pennsylvania to do Buffalo State Bengals football, baby, and work at a little college radio station named WBNY, 91.3 FM in Buffalo, New York, at Buffalo State, then college, now university. So Mike has gone on to great things, obviously, when you're the television and radio voice, because they do a simulcast. Obviously, they're not doing television tonight because it's an ESPN exclusive. No Joe B and Locker, although they'll be part of the pre- and post-game coverage, is my understanding, on Monumental throughout the playoffs. The ESPN broadcast will be Sean McDonough, Ray Ferraro, and Emily Kaplan. So, you know, again, there is no local TV coverage at all, like there was in round one. There is no local TV coverage, period, at all. So he'll just be doing radio tonight with Trip Tracy, who's their color analyst. And Mike's a good guy, and we have a lot of fun when we get to hang out, as we will a little bit later on. But he'll be joining the show at 2 o'clock. Still chasing somebody else. We'll let you know if anything comes along that line. We are expected tomorrow to be joined by Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt. So just stay tuned for that. the seventh round running back for the Washington Commanders. We'll let you know the details on that with rookie minicamp coming up at the end of this weekend. But I wanted to start officially the show with this. The NBA playoffs last night. I mean, listen, if you had on your bingo card Denver and the New York Knicks winning both games on the road, good for you, man. And you probably cleaned up at the window a little bit, especially if you put some money down. Good for you. Good job. Because they both won. And the Knicks had no business winning that game in Boston. Can't say the same for the Denver Rich and Creamy Nuggets, who got a last-second shot after, of course, a missed free throw by Oklahoma City and won 121-119 at the buzzer. Good job by the Nuggets. Everybody is like, oh, they pulled off a shocker. Well, okay. They beat the number one seed. They're the number four seed. I know they fired their coach with four games left to go. It's just one game. Series are often completely different after game one. Not always, but often. Aaron Gordon's game-winning three-pointer with 2.8 seconds left, and then the ensuing inbound and desperation heave by Oklahoma City at the buzzer obviously fell short, and Denver wins. But again, it was off a missed free throw. So Oklahoma City was, again, they lose 121-119. If they make the free throw, that they missed, they have 120 points. Denver needs the three in this case, so they would still have lost the game. But what happens when you miss a free throw is you don't have to make an inbounds play. They rebounded it, and they're already able to kickstart their offense. And it took, I think, a pass up the court, same side to Russell Westbrook, and then a fired pass across the other side to Aaron Gordon, and bang, in just a quick flash. So maybe if you make that free throw, Oklahoma City, maybe, just maybe, it's 120 to 118. Again, they still need a three-pointer, which theoretically they would have gotten, but ultimately, they would have had to inbound it, and presumably Oklahoma City would have at least pressured the inbound, or certainly pressured the target on the inbound. So Chet Holmgren misses the first of two free throws with 10 seconds left. But then, again, they get the rebound. And I don't know why this is... I'm sorry. He missed two free throws. That's what it was. He missed two free throws. My bad. So he missed the two free throws. That changes the perspective a little bit, right? Because if he makes, say, the one of them, they still need the three. But if he misses the second one, which he did, it springs the rebound and whatever. If he misses the first one, makes the second one, they still need the three, but again, they get to inbound it, which is a little bit more difficult than starting the fast break the way they did. But he missed two. Missed two. I was looking at the chart wrong. Sorry about that. The bottom line is this. If he makes both free throws, the Oklahoma City Thunder win that game in all likelihood. Right? Because if he makes both free throws, it's 121-121, assuming that Gordon ties it up. So I shouldn't say they win the game, but now all of a sudden you're not desperation heave at the end with 2.5 seconds left, and you still have overtime even if you are desperation heave. So I shouldn't say they win the game, but it certainly cost them the game. So you kind of back off, for those of you that weren't watching it up, and I fell asleep, to be honest with you. I can't stay up that late. But obviously a huge win for the Denver Rich and Creamy Nuggets. Nikola Jokic, awesome, as usual. I mean, he's still, in my opinion, the best player in the game. 42 points, 10 rebounds, 22 rebounds, 42 points, 22 rebounds, 17 defensively, 6 assists. Did have 7 turnovers. That's not great. But 2 blocks. That's Nikola Jokic, right? Jamal Murray, again, hits the 3-pointer. He only had 12 points on the night, 2 of 7 from 3-point land. And the Denver Nuggets get away with one on the road, shooting less than 45%, less than 32% from 3. They made most of their free throws, they made a good amount of their free throws at just under 82%. Oklahoma City, if you just want to look at them, they shot fairly well from 3, 15 of 43, 35%. Okay from the floor, 42 of 100, but 20 of 28 from the free throw line, 71.4%, including the 2 misses by Chet Holmgren. And I can't say it enough, guys, missed free throws are, I know nobody's perfect. It's just about as an abominable of a mistake as you can make in the NBA or in college basketball. It is the root of all evil. When you go 20 of 28 and you go 0 of 2 with 10 seconds left from the free throw line, that's why you lost the game. Not for any other reason, not coaching, not this, not that. That is the reason. And then you quickly go ahead to the New York Knicks and the Boston Celtics. The Knicks are down by 20 in the third quarter. And they come back and win in overtime, beating the Celtics at the Garden, TD Garden, I should say, in Boston, down 20 in the third quarter. In particular, shoot the ball from the floor well, 42.5%. But you know what they did? Shot enough three-pointers, 17 of 37, nearly 46%. Here's what they didn't do. They didn't have a clue from the free throw line. They were 17 of 31, 54.8%, and they somehow won. The New York Bricks, that's right, the New York Bricks were 17 of 31 from the free throw line, down 20 in the third quarter, and won in overtime against the defending NBA champion, Boston Celtics in Boston. Now listen, I'm not dumb enough to think that the series is over by any stretch, and neither should you. As a matter of fact, I would think Boston's going to win game 2 pretty handily. But A, crazy-ass win for the Knicks. B, what a terrible performance by the Celtics down the stretch, and especially in the first 2.5 minutes of overtime. I mean, Jaylen Brown basically saved their asses by making a 3 with about 2.5 minutes left, gave them a chance, but then he had a turnover on a drive in which he just tried to torpedo his way down the line, and he turned the ball over. I mean, come on! The Celtics were dreadful in the second half last night, and in overtime. All right, nice job, A-Mac. Kevin Harlan, TNT, on the call. You want to know why the Celtics lost besides falling asleep at the wheel in the third quarter with a 20-point lead, despite the Knicks shooting 54% from the free throw line? The Celtics did what every basketball fan should absolutely abhor, should absolutely cringe, should absolutely not listen to the analytics amigos, the number nerds, the Grant Paulsons of the world. I love you, Grant. I'm going to tell you what they did or didn't do next. Because if you didn't see the game, if you haven't checked the box score, if you haven't seen the highlights, if you haven't read a story, it's going to blow your freaking mind. Next on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE,
and I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today, and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, that's Jason Tatum of the Boston Celtics, the defending NBA champions, gagging down the stretch and in overtime. He was 7 of 23 from the floor, 4 of 15 from three-point land. He did have 16 rebounds. It's not like Jason Tatum was a complete non-factor. But, I mean, by and large, down the stretch, the entire Celtics team was a complete non-factor. They had like three turnovers on their first three possessions in overtime. It was terrible. It was just awful. They didn't deserve to win that game. And I'm calling them the New York Bricks, not because they didn't shoot from three well, not because they didn't shoot from the floor well overall, because they were terrible from the free throw line. There's no way an NBA team should go 17 of 31 from the free throw line and win on the road down by 20 in the third quarter in overtime against the defending champions. No chance. The Celtics, as I mentioned, Tatum was terrible from three-point line, 4 of 15. Guess what? They were awful as a whole. Derek White was 5 of 16. Jaylen Brown was 1 of 10. 15 of 60 from three-point land. 45 misses. The most ever from three-point land in an NBA playoff game. Shut the hell up about officiating and about anything. You sucked. If we should call anybody the Bricks, it should be the Celtics from three. But it just so happens to match the New York Knicks from the free throw line. What an atrocious performance by the Celtics. Just absolutely atrocious. And I'd like to say, well, this is the first time we've seen a team just hoisting up threes with no clue and no success. But I know better. I know better. Unfortunately, I watch a lot of NBA games where something like this happens. Just not to this level and not to this magnitude. All right, we will get to your calls in just a sec. Hang tight. I know Athens there. I know Paulie's there. It says Paulie wants to yell at me, which is, I think, just the way AMAC insists on scheduling, or I should say screening in Paulie, because Paulie's always mad at me about something. Although he should be happy today because his Bricks, I mean Knicks, won indeed a game that nobody gave them really a chance to win, especially when they were down by 20. Timeout for the trending alert, and then we return on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. All right, let's start with, of all things, college basketball, right? What does winning a national championship at Florida get you? Well, for Todd Golden, their head coach, it gets you a $40.5 million extension over 6 years, tying him to the college in Gainesville until the 2030-31 season, 6.75 annually. They were 36-4 in his third season in Gainesville and then won the program's third national title. We mentioned the Nationals are getting set for a twin bill against the Cleveland Guardians. Makeup of last night's game, the Guardians are 20-14. The Nationals 16-19. Game one coming up at 3:35 first pitch, 3:05 the coverage with Charlie and Dave here on Nats on Deck, all here on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. all throughout the day because, again, it is a traditional doubleheader. Game two, right here on the Team 980, will start roughly about a half an hour after game one. So, again, we'll turn you over to Nationals baseball at 3:05 this afternoon. And the big one across town is the Capitals and the Hurricanes. Game one of the Eastern Conference semifinals, Capital One Arena. In Washington between the two rivals, and certainly should be an interesting night in Chinatown. We'll have Mike Maniscalco, the longtime voice of the Carolina Hurricanes, joining us in just about a half an hour's time right here on the Team 9.
Yo, it's Jay Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Canadian, that's what's trending. All right, coming up, Adam Peters on the Pat McAfee Show. Take a little sample of what he had to say. I'm seeing a Jalen Lane highlight right now. I know AMAC is assembling, so we will hear from the general manager. 2 o'clock. Again, Mike Maniscalco, the television and radio voice of the Carolina Hurricanes. And we're only on till 3:05 today because Nationals baseball takes over. Charlie and Dave standing by for Nats on Deck. Hopefully the weather holds out. We will see. First scheduled pitch, 3:35, back-to-back doubleheaders. Again, we will see. Let's get out to the phones right here, right now, talking NBA playoffs from last night. The Celtics with a complete choke job down the stretch. They were horrible in the fourth quarter and in overtime. The Knicks were dreadful from the free throw line, had no business winning that game, down 20, and yet they won in overtime. The Oklahoma City Thunder, dreadful from the free throw line with 10 seconds left. Chet Holmgren missing two free throws. Inexcusable, sorry, just can't happen. And they lose on a game-winning near buzzer beater by Aaron Gordon from the wing on the three-point shot. All right, let's get to it on the phones. Let's get to our guy, Athan, in Annapolis in the leadoff spot here. Athan, how are you, my friend?
You know, I'm good, but I was going X-crazy last night with these basketball games. And you know, Chris, I don't watch basketball like I used to in the 90s because I love the Knicks. I'm a Knicks fan, and especially the ones of the 90s. John Starks, Charles Oakley, Ewing, Mason, Derek Harper, Xavier McDaniel, all those guys are like my heroes from when I was growing up. But I as a basketball fan in general, I would love to know the Celtics coach, what he has to say. That, like, okay, Porzingis got hurt. I understand that. But there was no effort to drive the ball to the basket. Yep. There was no Jason Tatum driving in and, you know, maybe taking a 15-foot jumper. Everything was three. I mean, I've never even seen something like that go on in a pickup game before, a Pop Warner game, let alone an NBA game. I was like, what am I watching here? And it's actually too bad you don't have actually Linus there today, because he would be defending it no matter what, because you know he relishes in that. But it's right. Ironic also that you have Paulie on the line, because I have a question for Paulie, because he knows a lot more about basketball than I do. I don't understand with 20 seconds left in the game, in the other game, why the Thunder had the lead with a three point lead. Why they started fouling Denver? It didn't make any sense to me. You let, in my opinion, Denver come down the floor and you play defense, hard-nosed press defense on them. If they make the three, you go into overtime. They basically cut their throat because they're the ones who were missing the free throws because they're the team that had to be fouled, but they started fouling Denver. So, I mean, my point in general, it was a weird night, but the Celtics, I think, embarrassed the league last night because I just kept saying, look, what is this? It's like everything's a three, 60 of them. It made no sense to me.
When you go 15 of 60 anywhere, you should just quit. But especially from three. To your point, and maybe it was they didn't think they were going to get calls. Come on. This isn't the same Knicks defense from last year, one. Two, the whole Porzingis thing, surprise, Kristaps Porzingis was limited and got hurt, and who knows his status moving forward. Only played 13 minutes. But he's not your only big guy. Al Horford is still somewhat productive. And I know you're asking a lot from Al Horford, but even he was 1 of 5 from three-point land. Stop settling. Stop thinking that the analytics are always right. And just because the NBA and college hoops has morphed into three-pointer after three-pointer after three-pointer after three-pointer after three-pointer, and just because everybody does it, doesn't mean you can't do it differently. Doesn't mean... Now, listen, the other night, Sunday night, was it? Houston, they didn't miss a lot of three-pointers, and they only scored 86 points or whatever it was. A lot of their misses were from around the paint and from around the elbow. So I'm not saying you're guaranteed to make shots, but you're a lot more likely to hit shots on a night where your threes are not falling from the elbow, from the paint, wherever, from 13 feet out, 14 feet out, than you are from 21, 22, 23 feet out. Period.
And to your point, Al Horford, last time I checked, he can post up and hit fadeaways or whatever. I mean, it was very surprising. I was texting my dad, like, what are we watching here? Like, is this some kind of schoolyard thing? But I am interested in Paulie's take, so I'll let you go, Chris, and hopefully I see you tonight at the game.
Yes.
We'll be looking for you and hopefully celebrating a win. Max and I are in 423.
I've already communicated with Max. I it's very kind of you, and I will make sure I spend a few minutes with you guys as soon as I can. I appreciate you, AA. Thank you,
always.
You got it, bud. Good way to get us started there. 301-230-09. Yeah, I have no idea. Paulie should be happy that his Knicks won, but I don't know, maybe I'm missing something. Maybe there's a reason why the Celtics went 15 of 60 from 3-point land. Are you okay over there?
Are you okay?
Are you okay?
That's how you sound. Listen, man. Hell to the W. Let's go Knicks. Now, my beef with you is, bro, I keep telling you this. You don't have to trash one sport because you like another one. All right? Don't do that, man. NBA playoffs has been good this year. Hockey playoffs has been good this year. Why we just can't enjoy both entities without you getting up here trying to trash the NBA, bro? Stop that, man. That's why people got a problem with you.
So I should just throw bouquets of flowers at the NBA playoffs.
No, you gotta throw bouquets of nothing. But
I should not talk about the Knicks going 17 of 32 from the free throw line.
You're going to trash the NBA, do the same type of trash for hockey. Because the little bit I watch of hockey, I be seeing the same things going on where teams be don't doing what they should be doing. Give both sports, both love, both criticisms, man. You ain't got to trash the NBA. The NBA playoffs is boring. NBA playoffs been far from boring. It's crazy, man. As far as we're acting,
I didn't say they were boring. I said they weren't well played. Both game seven sucked over the weekend.
Okay.
And the Celtics sucked from it didn't. And the Celtics sucked from 3-point land last night. The Knicks sucked from the free throw line.
Listen, I can say that the hockey game was trash. The team gave up two goals and less than a minute and then lost the overtime. I can say they choked. They was trash, but I didn't. I said, man, that was a hell of a game. Like I said, you ain't got to trash one entity to praise another. As far as that game go last night, that's how the Celtics play. That's how they win. And the crazy thing about it was they built that lead. But it's almost like football when you say you want to run first. I mean, you want to run first to open up the pass. But that's basically how they built that lead last night was they was taking it to the basket first. And then when they started building that pressure up, that's when they started kicking it out and hitting them threes. And they just got carried away with it because that's how they play. They want to shoot a lot of threes. They figure they're trying to play that old Golden State. They play that old Golden State thing of, okay, we're going to outscore you. That's going to be our defense. But the thing was, the Knicks picked up their defense intensity on the perimeter. And they started forcing them. They started keeping them out of the lane off the dribble. So they started trying to kick the ball around. And they fell in love with the three-point shot. That's all it was to it. Now, as far as the Knicks missing free throws, yeah, they missed some free throws. But a lot of that came from Mitchell Robinson, too. He was, like, what, three of nine or three of ten? Because they were doing that hack and shack thing or whatever. You know,
yeah, it was three of
Tibbs
ten.
Had me hot on that. Yeah. And Tibbs had me hot on that because he wasn't making a move. He just kept letting them do it, you know. But at the end of the day, it was a good game. The Knicks came out. They played defense. They put the pressure back on the Boston. And Boston, you know, didn't react. That's a coaching move right there. Because at some point, he should have took somebody by the neck and said, if somebody hoists up another three-pointer, I'm throwing them in the locker room.
Let me ask you one last thing. You're right. I might be a little bit too critical, but whatever. I mean, that's your opinion. My opinion is the game is poorly played. Yeah. I mean, it's all there is to it. I mean, I'm not going to tell you that the game was greatly played, that every Stanley Cup playoff game is tremendously played. I've never said that. It's just a far better product. But anyway.
I've been yelling at you for a long time.
Well, you yell at me about a lot of things. What happened on the final play of regulation? How does Boston fall asleep on Jalen Brunson off the inbound and totally forget to cover him and then scramble, and then how does he miss a 3-point, a 4-foot shot? How does that happen?
It was it was rim unkind, and it was a well-designed play. It was a well-designed play by the Knicks, by Tibbs. I give them credit on that one. Well-designed play, and it was rim on kind, that's all. And then you go to that next game, it wasn't Jamal Murray who hit the three-pointer. It was my man Aaron Gordon who hit the three-pointer.
I said Aaron Gordon at first, and then I said Jamal Murray. Sorry, my bad.
Athens, to answer your question, Denver was fouling because they rather gave up the two free throws than give up the three-point shot. But the whole problem with that was they fouled too early. They fouled with too much time left on the clock, and you had Joker on the bench. You could have let the clock kind of run out a little bit more. Like, I didn't understand why Shea Alexander, even though he had a clear shot at the basket, you up. Why are you taking that shot, by the way? Run some more clock or time off the clock, let them foul you, hit the two free throws, then you go up three, because they was out of timeouts. Denver was out of timeouts. Both teams right. were.
Okay.
So, again, that was a coaching mistake. By what you call him, coach. So coaching when you move on into these rounds, deep into the playoffs, coaching is big. And coaching showed up last night in a negative fashion. Brewster, man, I love you, man. Hail to the W.
I love you too, Paulie.
Hey, I know you a hockey guy, man, but give basketball love too. I'm trying to give hockey love. So give basketball
love. I'm giving
love,
basketball
right?
love by talking right, about
man.
It.
No, you came right up here killing it. Yesterday too. You had me hot yesterday. I wanted to call you so bad yesterday. I said, you know what? I'm gonna wait till tomorrow. I'm gonna wait to see how the Knicks do.
All right.
Because I was already on edge anyway.
You got your revenge.
We got two good games tonight. Right. You know what I mean?
Two good games tonight. I'll be busy tonight.
I got Minnesota in the first game.
So do I.
And I got Minnesota in the first game. And I got Indiana taking the 2-0 lead in the second game. Indiana is some tough guys, and Cleveland ain't ready for that yet.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Thank
I'll take it off there, man. Hail to the W. Right.
Appreciate it. It's a lot to say. Let's go to Kane and Clinton, then we'll take a timeout. What's up, Kane? How are you?
How you doing?
What's up, Kane? Sorry.
No, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Good God, that last call was long-winded.
I mean, you can say that. Now, you can say that about me, too. But once Paulie gets going, there ain't no stopping, man. He just gets on his rant, and he just starts knocking down trees.
I've been listening to him call the show for years, and that was one of the worst takes I've ever heard. Someone who is a sports analyst, is it not your job to be critical of sports? That's literally part of your job. Now, let's get to the basketball. I didn't even see the Boston game. I watched the Denver game with my dad. Just running up and down the court, either running to the basket or coming up with three-point shots. When you have close games and it's still hard to watch, that is a true testament of the game is not. It's not a good game. It's not. Somebody hoisting up threes, and I'm 38. So I got to see Jordan, his last bit of prime, Kobe, and the beginning of LeBron's era. And I'm saying that for a reason. A lot of these young people like to say, this era's better, this era's better. You have no one utilizing pop. Anyways, no one had a high school basketball game outside of hanging up a three or running to the basket. Even Shaq Alexander, who has a decent mid-range game, Joker is so dominant. Joker does have great footwork inside the paint, 2.12 footer. You have guys just, you know, all the way through and just running to the basket. It is hard.
Hey, Kane, I got to jump in. I love the passion. I love the argument. You're so right, but your phone is all choppy. So I'm going to, I love the call. I love the passion. I love the argument, but I just want to get, just so we can understand. So I'm just going to let you go, but I appreciate it. Hopefully we get you on a better line next time. But Kane's right. Like, you can sit there and say, this is what they do. This is what the game is. This is what the game has morphed into. It doesn't mean everybody's got to be in the same shoe size. You know, and as Paulie pointed out, early in the game, they were getting to the hole. Then they just started popping threes because that's what the analytics say. It's just like in baseball, we don't try and make contact anymore. For the most part, we try and hit home runs or we strike out. And that's just accepted. And that's why batting average is down from like 268 20 years ago across the board to like 241 because nobody tries to make contact anymore. But that's an excellent point by Kane. They were not, teams just refuse to run offense in a lot of cases. And then just one last one about the Celtics, the last sequence of overtime, the timeout, tried to inbound, couldn't inbound, timeout again. So two timeouts back-to-back. They come back, and then they throw a pass cross-court, and the Knicks defender rips it out of the guy's hand and a turnover, and they don't even get a shot off. They should have called a third timeout, and they had already called one too many damn timeouts. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Let's take a timeout on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
So that's the problem with the Knicks, and that's the problem with the Phoenix Suns, and that's the problem with Chris Russell. He don't want to listen.
Paulie's greatest hits there. I do want to listen, but I also have, as Kane basically pointed out, a show to do, right? You don't have to like it. You can call in and disagree, and Kane, it's a great call. I wish your phone was a little bit better, but we were having problems hearing you. Tried to go as long as I could, but great call, great point. I understood exactly what you were trying to say. And he hit it on the head. This show isn't like, hey, everything's great. We live in Shangri-La. No. That's not the way that it works. We give you a forum. We give you an opportunity to yell at me, to get after it, to tell me I'm full of crap. That's your right. As long as you do it somewhat respectfully. And you don't curse. Otherwise, you got to run your ass. The NBA, I got a couple of texts within the last half an hour. One said, the NBA playoffs have sucked this year. The other said, the Boston Celtics missed five more three-pointers when you went to commercial break. I mean, I don't think they've sucked. The games that I've seen, and I watch bits and pieces of as many games as I can. I can't watch every game in its entirety. I just got too many other games on. They've been all right. They've been fairly good at times, and they've been poorly played at other times. One thing I'll leave you with this hour, just because a game is close does not mean it's well played. And that was my point about the Knicks and the Celtics. I think Oklahoma City and Denver was pretty well played for the most part. The Knicks and the Celtics was not a well-played game. Just because it was close, just because it went into overtime, just because it was a stirring win for the Knicks, does not mean it was a great game, a well-played game. And I say that all the time. You know, again, you're going to have a 2-1 game in hockey. It could be the most exciting thing, or it could be very boring. It just kind of depends. But most of the time, it's very exciting. In the NBA, you've had a couple of stinkers. And even last night, when everybody was going gaga over the Boston and the Knicks, it was a poorly played game, period. Poorly played. All right, the voice of the Carolina Hurricanes. Previews. Eye on the enemy. Next, Mike Maniscalco, also my college broadcast partner. How many times did I have gas, bad gas, in the car in Ithaca, New York? We'll find out next on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. All right, good to have you with us just after 2 o'clock in the nation's capital and beyond. Team 980 and the Odyssey app. Game one of the Eastern Conference semifinals tonight between the Carolina Hurricanes and the Washington Capitals. 7 o'clock, 106.7 The Fan has your radio call with John Walton, Ken Sabourin, and the crew. And if you want to listen to the Carolina Hurricanes radio call, my next guest will have you covered. It is Mike Maniscalco, the television and radio voice of the Carolina Hurricanes, and more importantly, my longtime radio partner at Buffalo State University and my longtime pal. Hello, Mr. Maniscalco. How are you?
Oh, Mr. Russell, it is great to hear from you again. I was a little worried with the choice of the CeeLo Green song to bring me on, that there's an ulterior motive for those who know the real version of that.
I had nothing to do with that, just for the record.
Yeah, sure. That's what every host says.
Uh-huh.
I know you. We work together.
Yes.
32 years this has been going on. Can you believe that?
It's unbelievable that we should meet in this environment, right? I mean, here you are, the prestigious television and radio voice of the Carolina Hurricanes, and you should know, hockey aside, I want the Capitals to win, right? It's better for me. But I am so happy for you. I'm proud of you. This is awesome. I could have never imagined, you know, 30-ish years ago, traveling the back roads, the highways and byways to Washington and Jefferson and Pennsylvania, to Ithaca, New York, to eating at bad Chinese buffets, that we'd be here 30 years later with you behind the mic for the Carolina Hurricanes and me, well, be me and doing a loudmouth talk show. It's so cool.
Yeah, I mean, look, this was the dream. I don't think any of us thought it was going to get to this point, but here we are. But yeah, the back roads from Cortland to to Ithaca to Buffalo, and the Suniac East.
Yes.
Let's face it, we've covered it all, Chris. There's not much we haven't seen right now.
Exactly, no doubt about it. Mike Maniscalco, the television and radio voice of the Carolina Hurricanes, is with us on the eve here, just 5 hours away from puck drop at Capital One Arena. All right, so let's get into this because I'm sure everybody's had enough of the yuck yucks and what we used to do 30 years ago. But it is still an amazing story that we're here. And again, let me repeat, I am so proud of you. Let's talk about the team that obviously you're so closely associated with. When I think of the Carolina Hurricanes, I think speed, skill, transition. I think depth. I think experience. Am I missing anything? Let's start there.
Resiliency. Okay. This is a team that they don't play to the scoreboard. And I think that's one of the things that makes them so dangerous. Like, it doesn't matter if they're up 3-0 or down 3-0. And we saw that in the last series against New Jersey. I've been able and fortunate enough to see it under Rod Brindamore since he's been the head coach. Like, that's the hallmark. And that's the one thing that, if you talk about intangibles, I don't know how I can put this in a measurable for you, but that's one of the things that makes this team and has put them into one of the higher, I don't want to say elite, because elite is when you win a championship, but it puts them in that conversation of they can get there. And it just goes into that mix with what they do. And look, this year was supposed to be, everybody was like, well, they lost all of these players from their roster, and How are they going to replace him? And here they are again with another postseason victory for a series under their belt, moving into the second round, and we'll see how this series will play out. But that's the one thing. Everything that you hit, but there's an intangible in that room that they have this belief they're never out of a game.
Let's start from back and then move out with Freddie Anderson. He makes his return. He missed the final game of the Devils series, a double overtime winner. He's had some injury issues, obviously, but he just got a one-year contract extension. Clearly, he's their choice, right? What do the Canes have in Freddie Anderson? What are the Caps looking at? Where would you say maybe is his ultimate strength, weakness, whatever you want to throw into that mix?
I think that his strength is, for a man his size, and he's a big man, he does not flail. It's his economy of motion to get from side to side. When Freddie Anderson is on, Chris, he goes side to side like it's nothing. And it's just one of those things, and he takes up so much of the net, and he's calm. I would love to put a heart rate monitor on him. I don't think his heart rate gets above 65. Ever. Like, it's just how he can, you know, how he just handles his business. Right. I don't know if it's anything to do with being Danish, but he does not seem to let things bother him. He doesn't get too rattled with that. So that's the strength for Frederik Andersen. And when he is locked in, again, he is technically as good as they come. He moves post to post really well. When you're talking about attacking him, though, this is one of these things where New Jersey tried to do it. It led to him missing game number 5, and that's when Timo Meier gets into the paint when you want to make life tough for him and make him have to peek around looking for shots. So that's the tough thing. I'm not saying that you get to him mentally that way, but you get to him by getting in front of the crease. That's one of the things that teams do. But he's so big that when he moves out to the top of the crease, he takes up the net. But when he's playing on his line, he can go side to side with anybody in this league. If you want to say the numbers don't lie, Chris, when he's healthy, the numbers are as good as anybody else that you'd put in you know, top 5 goalie conversations in the NHL.
So do you think he's 100%? Is there anybody that's 100%? Like, how would – I know you're not a doctor, but how would you assess?
No, he's 100%. That's the one thing for Frederik Andersen. If he is not right, he will and that's one of those things where I know there's a – you know, when you get a reputation, it follows you around fair or not. But he's right. He's ready to go. If he wasn't, I don't think that he would be turning and saying, yeah, I want to go. He wants to make sure he's okay.
Right.
So there is absolutely no excuse. So, yeah, he's 100%, or at least as far as 100% he can.
Sure.
Be.
When we look at the Carolina Hurricanes defense, we're being joined by the television and radio voice of the Carolina Hurricanes, Mike Maniscalco, also my former college broadcast partner, as we discussed at the beginning of this, and longtime friend. And it'll be great to see you again tonight, as it was a couple of weeks ago. You know, of course, Dmitry Orlov won a Stanley Cup here in Washington. How good is this defensive group? I mean, he's a part of it. Obviously, Brent Burns, Slavin. We know Gostisbehere. I mean, it seems like a pretty good, deep group. How do you assess that?
The one thing that this defense does that I don't think that every team in the league can say this, they trust all three of their pairings to put them out in situations. Now, the Walker-Gostisbehere pairing is more of your offensive pairing, just because of the nature of Shane Gostisbehere. But he's been very good defensively in a Canes uniform. But Sean Walker is a guy who jumps into the play. The one thing for all of the pairings, what they do, Chris, they have a green light to go and be offensive and to jump up into plays. But defensively, when it comes back, as a unit, I don't know if there are 6 better defensemen in their own zone playing the system that's asked of them, which means going and retrieving pucks and then breaking out and starting transition and knowing where to go with the puck. And then everybody in D.C. knows Dmitry Orlov. He has been this year, he would probably tell you not his best year professionally, but right now when you need to be at your best, he's at his best. In fact, I asked him before we came up to Washington, I said, hey, are you going to go out with any of the old teammates? And he goes, no, not for the playoffs.
Not for the playoffs.
We can wait for the series to be over.
Exactly.
So, this ain't the regular season, Chris, as you know.
No, oh, yeah.
The strength of the D-Core is they all skate well. They're not overly physical. You know, this isn't a defensive core that's going to beat you up. There's no Chris Prongers on this back end, no Scott Stevens. But what there is six guys who play this system as well as Rod Brind'Amour and Tim Gleason want them to play.
We know this Carolina team, like I said, speed, skill, depth. It starts up front. Sebastian Aho, I assume he'll draw Pierre-Luc Dubois' line because PLD is the Capitals' number one defensive center. Is that what you're expecting? And who do you think ultimately, how do you think that matchup, if that's the matchup, kind of balances itself out?
I think it is. I mean, if you're Spencer Carberry, you're going to want to get your best defensive guy out, especially the way that Sebastian Aho's been in the last three games of the Jersey series.
Yep.
You're going to want him out there against the Canes' top offensive centerman. But the thing for Carolina, Chris, is, and where there are such a tough matchup for everybody in the league is, yeah, that's their top line. Right now with Sebastian Aho, Jackson Blake, and Andrei Svechnikov here in this postseason. But the strength is it's the sum.
Yep.
It's not just a part.
Yep.
You know, this team doesn't rely on, well, Sebastian Aho's got to score or else his team doesn't win.
Mm-hmm.
It's all four lines. When the Canes are at their best, they're rolling all four lines. No offensive line is going to get 21, 22, 23 minutes unless it's some weird special teams game and you're getting a bunch of power plays. So you want to keep the minutes somewhat even. You want to roll the four lines. But, yeah, you're going to see Dubois. And for me, Pierre-Luc Dubois, this was a great season for him because, as you know, and I think everybody in Washington knew, a lot of questions about him.
Yep.
And you know what?
Yep.
I think that coming from L.A. and not, I don't want to say humbled, but when you saw what the return was for him or what they had to give up, you know, he's coming here. And I think the best thing, and some players are like this, you don't have to be the guy in Washington if you're Pierre-Luc Dubois. This is your role. Play this role to the best of your ability, and everything else will take care of itself. So that's going to be a matchup that I'm interested to watch because if Dubois can get the better of it, the Caps are in a really good spot. But Sebastian Aho and his line mates, they're about as competitive as they can get. This is going to be a good chess match, and I really think this is the series where home ice and getting those matchups
yep.
is going to have a factor in the outcome of these
yeah,
games.
Yeah, because Roddy Brind'Amour can, you know, try and do something in Raleigh on Saturday and Monday, maybe if games one and two go sideways a little bit with that matchup. The television and radio voice of, and my longtime friend Mike Maniscalco of the Carolina Hurricanes is with us in advance, less than five hours away from puck drop at Capital One Arena for game one of the Eastern semifinals. So when these two teams played in mid-August, Carolina had the two-goal comeback in the third period. They were going against, not against Logan Thompson, but against Charlie Lindgren. The Capitals have had some troubles defensively, clearing the puck possession, turnovers, what have you. Is that the way the Carolina Hurricanes are going to win this series, capitalizing on Capitals' mistakes? Or is it just, again, the depth, the speed, the skill transition, and the overall game?
I mean, Chris, this is the playoffs. Every series comes down to do you capitalize on a mistake? And the funny thing is, these teams kind of mirror each other with how they play. You know, it's getting pucks in deep. You get the forecheck in on these defense. You try to create a turnover, and you try to create whatever chaos, whatever havoc that you can come up with and go from there. So, I mean, it's anything. It's a team that can limit the mistakes that they make with the puck and where those mistakes happen that have a huge advantage. But I'm a big believer in styles make fights. And for Washington, and you guys know this up here, they're a bigger, more rough and tumble team. At least that's the line in the tail of the tape
sure.
where, you know, the Canes don't really want to play that game. My favorite thing, the biggest misnomer is the Canes aren't a physical team because they don't hit a lot. Well, they're a puck possession team. When you're holding on to the puck, you're not the people chasing around
mm-hmm.
the puck carrier doing the hitting. You're getting hit. So they're built for absorbing what Washington wants to do. And this all comes down to, for me, if the Canes, even though both teams are doing similar things, if the Canes can dictate the pace, the tempo, if they can flip the pucks in deep, if they can force Washington's D to turn their back to the play and go get it, and then you got to hit them when you get there on the forecheck, that's going to make life miserable for Washington's defense. And look, I'm a big fan of the revival and two big players for Washington this year. We talked about Dubois, but Jacob Chychrun.
Yep.
You knew the talent was always there. He had to stay on the ice. Well, he stayed on the ice. He's shown you the talent that he's had. But, you know, the group for Washington really has stepped up defensively. But can Carolina's pressure force Washington into those mistakes? If they can do that, if the Canes can play their high-pressure game for 60 minutes, it's going to make life really tough for Washington, either here at Capital One Arena or when we go to Raleigh and Lenovo Center.
You mentioned some of the physicality edge of the Capitals. We saw that play out in that last regular season matchup, right? The Capitals had a really good second period. They were taking the body. They were taking it hard. Yep. They were going after them, and they were laying the lumber. And that forced Carolina into mistakes, and it got the Capitals going, and it was arguably one of their best periods down the stretch. How do you, and you mentioned Carolina being such a good puck possession team, and obviously you're right, along with that speed and transition, how do you avoid, if you're Carolina, getting into a match where Washington is coming out, knowing that that's their best chance to neutralize them? Is there anything you can do besides, again, playing a dump and chase and aggressive forecheck style? Is there anything that you would suggest that say, well, we can kind of minimize, I guess, the physicality edge that Washington has?
Yeah, control the neutral zone, Chris. I mean, that's plain and simple. Don't let Washington get easy clear-ins and cross corners from the neutral zone where you can send in Tom Wilson, where you can send in Alexei Protas and have them, or Alexander Ovechkin, where they can go in and get a free run on the defense. The neutral zone, if you can gap up and force just little chips into the zone, not the we're going to get it in deep and pound the defense. That's how you do it. But you and I can sit here and say this all day long. You know, yeah, if you do this, that's how you win the game, but it's easier said than done when you get to it. But that's the way, because you and I'll go back to the game played at Capital One, where that game changed on Alexander Ovechkin delivering a big hit early in the second period. Mm-hmm. It changed the tenor of that game. Now, we can both say the game meant nothing for either team, because it really didn't, the grand scheme, but you can have moments that change the momentum of a game. And that's where, for Washington, they have those heavy hitters that can change the momentum in a game or a period. Where the Canes, the momentum changes by how quick their transition is or how their forecheck goes in and causes some kind of turmoil for the defense, or even worse, if you're, you know, a team that gets stuck with a forward that's back there trying to have to cover up for a defenseman who jumped in on a play. It's all going to come down to little things. These teams know each other so well that there's no secrets here, and nobody's going to come out. You know, this isn't a movie. It ain't Rocky II, you know, where you're going to teach them how to fight, you know, right-handed and then make them switch. That's not what this is. This is whoever does what they do best and gets to it early enough and starts to dictate this is how the game's going to be played. They're going to be the team that walks out into the Eastern Conference Final.
Yeah, no doubt about it. One more for you. Whoever wins this series, just from what you've seen, last night, maybe a little Florida, Tampa, Toronto, or what you've seen throughout the year, do you feel like the team that wins this series, Washington or Carolina, and I'm sure you're picking Carolina and I'm picking Washington in seven, just so you know, you feel that like that is the best team in the East, or with Florida having Marchand and Tkachuk back, that they still are, or Toronto, and obviously Nylander was tremendous last night. How do you kind of assess and handicap moving forward with whoever gets beyond this series?
I don't want to disrespect Toronto, so you know what that means, because you're a big fan of the Big Tuna, Bill Parcells. I'm about to disrespect somebody here. Toronto is this team. I love what Craig Berube has brought behind the bench for them and how they played and a little bit more of the commitment to defense. But Toronto is still going to be, I have to keep seeing them do it for me to believe that they're going to. That's a big win for them in game one, but they're at home. And now we'll see what the Anthony Stolarz situation is for them. But even if they were fine, I'd have my questions about Toronto. Florida, I never discount a champion. You know, you're the champ until you're done, until you get knocked out. So they're the team that I would look at, but I've watched them this postseason and how they got through Tampa so quick. I went, man, that's going to be a tough team to get through, because I thought Tampa was going to give them everything that they could hope for and more. But then they come out and they look a little sluggish against Toronto, but I don't want to jump the gun in game number one. But I do believe, and we'll stick with the Metro thought here. After watching the game last night, I think whoever comes out of the Canes-Cap series, and of course health is a big part of it, knock on wood for both sides on that, but whoever comes out of this series, I do think is going to be the team that goes on to the Stanley Cup final.
Interesting. Well, listen, buddy, I'll see you in a couple of hours. I appreciate you so much for doing this. Maybe we'll try and hook up again here later in the series. But, you know, I know you got to you root for your guys. I got to root for my guys. But, you know, we can be friends in the end. And it was great seeing you a couple of weeks ago. And, again, I look forward to catching up with you over, I don't know, maybe a box of popcorn later on tonight. Okay?
No, yeah, we can do something. But much like Dmitry Orlov, I'm going to hold off on you and I going out to dinner until the series is over, but I'm going to count on you to recommend a really good Chinese buffet for me to go to.
All right, there we go, baby. I mean, you're in Chinatown. Like, you should be able to find something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you kind of live up here. I mean, we'll just make it interesting, yeah, you know? The team that doesn't advance, one of us buys the lunch. All That's right. how it works. Okay. Buys the dinner.
We can do that. We can do that. We can make it work. Thank you, pal. I appreciate you. I'll see you in a couple hours, all right?
Anytime, Mr. Russell, you're the best.
I'm not better than you. That's my guy, Mike Maniscalco, the television and radio voice of the Carolina Hurricanes. And, oh, yeah, 30 years ago, we used to roam the mean streets of Utica, New York, and Ithaca, New York, and Cortland, New York, just traveling around, trying to get from game to game, telling all sorts of weird stories, and eating at bad Chinese buffets. All right. Appreciate him for joining us and giving us the lowdown on the Carolina Hurricanes. We'll get back to your calls in just a wee little bit. Hang tight. We'll start with the Birdman coming up next on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. All right. Good to have you with us. Let's go right out to the phone calls and get a couple of you guys in as quickly as we can. Let's say hello to my guy, the Birdman. Birdie, how are you?
What's up, Chris?
Hello, Birdman. You know, I haven't even gotten into the Justin Tucker situation yet, so this is actually perfect timing because that was on the docket. I mean, I thought it would happen a week ago. It happened yesterday. You're a diehard Ravens fan. Are you bummed, or was this just what you expected?
I expected it. The general consensus is that when they came in for rookie camp, the Ravens were very impressed with the rookie, and that's when they made the call. Last year, he started to slow down, which you saw on some of the national broadcast games and, in obviously the playoffs. So I kind of expected it. You know, he is a pillar in the community up here in Baltimore. So he does a lot. I mean, it's a shame what has transpired. Obviously, if the allegations are true, and that's for the NFL and law enforcement to decide. But it's not a good way to end his career. But I do think, yeah, there's some justification on there. It's a football issue. But I do think, though, Chris, that if what is going on with some of the allegations did not happen, that Tucker would be back and at least be able to compete for the starting job.
Yeah. I think the icing on the cake is just that. Like, he struggled enough, 11 missed field goals and 2 missed extra pointers since week 8 of 2023. It wasn't just last year. You know this, and I know this because we talked about this. He struggled a little bit in 2023, second half of the season. Not tremendously, but 8 missed field goals last year. And again, 11 missed field goals and 2 extra points over the last year and a half. If you didn't have the accusations, you're right. They may have drafted somebody or signed somebody and brought them in to compete, and that makes sense logically football-wise. But when your combined age struggles and that, it's just too much to overcome.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just waiting for the Giants to pick him up. They're dysfunctional up there, so they'll probably wind up picking him up. But
that's a side swipe at a bunch of people if I've ever heard one. All right. Okay. Go ahead. Now, you were going to kill the NBA playoffs, so I'm more interested in that. Go ahead.
Yeah. So look, I can't tell you what's worse this year, the hockey playoffs or the NBA playoffs, frankly, because I haven't watched a single second of NHL playoffs.
Well, that's your problem.
I'm still trying to figure out what icing is.
Yeah. Well, that's your problem.
Yeah, I know. But I will say this for the NBA. The NBA playoffs, I don't know what the hell people are thinking. Yeah, there have been some dominant performances, but the reason why there's been some dominant performances because the defense has been bad, and fundamentally, it's just the game's awful right now. It is just awful. And look, I get offense. Same thing as football, baseball, whatever. But come on, last night's a prime example. Fundamentally, why is OKC, taking that fouling so early? I don't understand. They put Denver on the line.
Right.
They come up. Yeah. I just don't get it.
I mean, probably because you're trying to limit how much Nikola Jokic kills you down the stretch.
Yeah, but Joker's not going to score 40 and 22, Chris, single game.
Well, I know, but he did. I mean, he did last night, and he's won a bunch of MVPs.
Bad defense, Chris.
I know.
OKC is supposed to be the crown jewel of the West. If that's the crown jewel of the West playing last night, the Celtics or whoever's coming out of the East, probably the Cavs at this point, are going to wind up killing them.
Remember, one game does not determine a series.
I still say, OKC comes out of the West, and it's probably going to be against the Cavs. I'm tired of this. I know they're deep. I know they play good defense, but I think Cleveland would beat them. So. Yeah, that's
right.
My 2 cents.
There you go. Thank you, Bert. Appreciate you. Love you.
All right, Chris.
Let you go on that. We've got to take another quick time out. We'll get back with Dr. Sabah in just a moment, and we will update you on everything going on in the world of sports. All right, a lot is going on, especially here in Washington, D.C. We're half an hour away from Nats on Deck, first of two games right here on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. For the Nationals and the Cleveland Guardians, rain out makeup from last night, and a traditional one-admission doubleheader with Game 2 starting approximately a half an hour after Game 1 comes to a conclusion. Again, you could listen to both games right here on the Team 980. Jake Irvin and Luis Ortiz, your pitching matchup in Game 1. Meanwhile, the Caps and the Canes. We just talked to Mike Maniscalco, the television and radio voice of the Carolina Hurricanes, just a couple of moments ago. If you missed that, you want a preview on the Carolina Hurricanes, check out the Odyssey app or the full podcast as soon as it's posted, again, on the Odyssey app, Team 980, or at the team980.com. Game 1, Eastern Conference Semis, coming up at 7 o'clock tonight from Capital One Arena. Edmonton and Vegas go at it after that, right around 9:30. Meanwhile, Indiana, looks for a commanding 2-0 lead in Cleveland over the Cavaliers. First up at 7 o'clock in the NBA. Golden State, Minnesota, game one of that series, right around 9:30 in that one. And that's what's trending. All right, 22.
Oop. Lock back for Savard. Back in net is Dobesh. Everyone standing here in the nation's capital. The Caps are moving on as the puck goes far wing, chipped up in the air by Trevor Van Riemsdyk to the Montreal line. For the first time since 2018, the Capitals nail down a best of seven series. Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, Montreal.
All right, John Walton on the call on the Caps Radio Network. As you can hear, John and Ken tonight over on 106.7, starting at 6:45 for the pregame, 7:05-ish for the puck drop from Capital One Arena, Carolina Hurricanes and the Washington Capitals. That the final call of the Montreal series. Listen, the Montreal series was not easy. We know what Wilson's hit in the third period of Game 4 kind of spurred that comeback that night, that Sunday night, and led to that outburst in the third period. They were terrible in the first three third periods. You cannot allow that against Carolina. As a matter of fact, they blew a two-goal lead against Carolina in that third period that Mike and I were talking about in that final week or so of the regular season. Now, that was with Charlie Lindgren, but still, It's not just the goaltender. It's the defense. It's the defensive pairs and groups and forwards coming back and getting puck possession and clearing the puck and not turning the puck over. That will be a large part of this series, in addition to the physicality edge that Washington has. All right, let's get a couple of calls in here before we go too long. Again, Nationals baseball coming up 25 minutes from now. We're off at 3:05 so that we can bring you Nats on Deck and then both games of the doubleheader right here on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app between the Nationals and the Cleveland Guardians. Let's get to Dr. Sabal with us. What's up, Doc? How are you?
Well, Chris, you timed it perfectly. I was able to just take a quick little break. And so
you sounded frustrated at first. I was like, whoa, what did I do?
Well, I tell you what y'all doing. Okay, I know your tactic here, y'all little capital people.
Uh-oh.
You're not good enough to beat us, so you're going to beat us up. That's what, who do we even play? That team, New Jersey. That's what they did. They knocked our goalie out. They kicked him right in the face. Should have been a penalty. They didn't even call a penalty. And even if his nose is broken, dude, get back on the court. Let's go, you know? And or ice, whatever you guys call it. But I'll be at game four. And shout out to Mike. You know, me and him go way back. I won the draft sort of contest.
I remember
local
that,
radio.
Yes.
I was on his team.
Yes, I remember that.
I'm hoping I can see him when I'm in the stadium next time. I didn't get a chance to last time, but I'll be at game four when we close it out.
You know, you just tell Mike, in case he needs a refresher, that, you know, you're one of my people, even though you're rooting for the Canes. And we have to, we have to be on opposite sides. And we are
That's certainly right. On
opposite sides of the name game issue when it comes to the beloved football team.
We still love each other.
But we still love and respect each other. So you tell Mike that, you know, he's got to, like, I don't know, he's got to be extra nice to you. He's got to, you know, buy you whatever you want, jersey.
Cinnamon bun.
Cinnamon buns.
Hurricanes Arena is awesome.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, whatever it takes to make sure that Dr. Sabah is happy.
Exactly. Now, can I do a little bit of
announcement
on the other side?
You tell him not to bill me, okay?
Okay, I'll tell him that. Now, as far as the analysis is concerned, here's what I'm hearing, because I'm not, you know, the biggest hockey aficionado. Like, once my team's out, I'm going to probably be done. So, they are very fast. We shoot a lot of shots. We're not physical. So I think y'all's the way it's going to be is to basically rough us up because you can't out-talent us. It's almost like what LeBron James does with Steph Curry. He just grabs and pulls and, you know, pushes them all down because he can't outskill him. So this is why I don't like that kind of play, and I hope the refs keep it clean, because if they don't and it gets physical, y'all's advantage. I want there to be hockey. I don't want it to be rugby. So that's all I ask. But I am scared to death about this whole tournament thing. Just scared to death. I think whoever wins this is going to win it all. So that's my prediction.
There you go. Thank you, Dr. Sabah.
Thanks,
I appreciate
all right,
you.
Thanks.
Let me just say this. The Capitals, depends on who you look at, but moneypuck.com, I put up this chart last night. The Capitals have the worst chances, the worst mathematical, analytical odds of winning the Stanley Cup. I don't get it. I really don't. I'm trying to understand it. I mean, listen, I think this is going to be a really, really difficult series. But MoneyPuck.com has the Leafs as the favorite to win the Stanley Cup. Now, they're up 1-0. They have a 17.5% chance of winning the cup, according to MoneyPuck.com. I have no idea how they arrive at that, but that's what they say. The Florida Panthers, who they beat last night in Game 1, have an 11.3% chance. The Edmonton Oilers, 9.1% chance. The Vegas Golden Knights, 13.4% chance. The Dallas Stars, 12.3% chance. The Winnipeg Jets, who barely beat the Blues with 2 seconds left and then went to double overtime, 13.7% chance. The Capitals, the Carolina Hurricanes, 15% chance. The Capitals only, according to MoneyPuck.com, however they arrive there, only have a 7.7% chance of winning the Stanley Cup. That's almost half of what they give the Carolina Hurricanes, the opponent. To make it to the third round, they have Carolina 55.4%. Washington, obviously, because they'd have to beat Carolina, 44.6%. To make the Stanley Cup Finals, the Capitals, 18% chance. The Canes, 28.1% chance. I don't know why they're so down on the Capitals. I mean, listen, the Capitals did not play great in the final month of the season. I think they were bored. I think they were chasing Ovechkin. I think, you know, obviously there was the injury to Logan Thompson. There were some other nagging injuries, the injury to Alexei Protas. And they were bored. They kind of fell asleep a little bit at the wheel. And I understand they are beatable. They are beatable. There is no denying that. As a matter of fact, on JP and B-Mitch's show with Toby, I picked the Canes to win tonight, but the Capitals to win the series in seven. I think this is going to be a brutally difficult series. And I don't feel good about even the Capitals in seven. But I feel like this is a 50.5, 51% to 49.5, 49% type series. You know, like, I mean, right there, maybe overtime game seven. Maybe. I mean, I feel like it's that even. And why I'm giving the Capitals just the slightest of edge, A, home ice, not that that's a guarantee. B, I think they're better in goal with Logan Thompson over Freddie Anderson. And because the Capitals truly, as I've mentioned, down the middle with four very good centers, I think, that helps them out. That's something they really have not had since the 2018 Stanley Cup run. They need to be great on the power play. I don't have confidence that they will be great, but if they can be great like they were during a large part of that 2018 Cup run, you know, and you get games into overtime. We saw game one against Montreal after they blew the two-goal lead. Alex Ovechkin comes back right away. Boom, 3-2 winner. We saw in that 18 Cup playoff run, they won a game five against Columbus in overtime quickly. Nick Backstrom, they won game six in Pittsburgh. Evgeny Kuznetsov to finally get over the hill. You know, these are the things. You get into overtime, and sometimes it's bad puck bounces and bad luck and whatever. You got to find a way to win. I feel a little bit better being that Ovechkin finally cracked the code, but you got to find a way to win. All right, let's get to Lou in D.C. here before we wrap up the calls. What up, Lou? How are you?
Hey, what's going on, Chris? How you doing?
How are you, Lou?
I'm good, man. You feeling better, huh?
I'm feeling okay. Yeah, yeah. It's, you know. Yeah, I'm doing all right. It's a busy time, but I'm heading over to Nationals Park right after this and then heading to Capital One Arena a little bit later on.
Cool, cool. That's good. Yeah, I think this is going to be a tough one, man. They got a – you know, the only thing that I feel maybe Carolina might have advantage is because of, you know, we ain't got that grit like, you know, Oshie, those kind of players on the team. I mean, we just got a bunch of guys in there, but – you know, we don't have those kind of players, so that kind of make it a little hard, maybe, you know, as far as scoring goals and things like that. Yeah, it's going to be a tough series, but, you know, hopefully we can find a way to pull it off, man, because they always waiting on Ovi to do everything for them, and, you know, it's only Tom and him, and I'm the only two players that's always stepping up and making things happen. And I wish, you know, a bunch of the other guys that we have. I mean, I like number 21, the big guy from Russia. He's good, too. He's coming.
Protas, yeah.
So hopefully, yeah, he could pick it up and go from there and see if we could find a way to try to, you know, match up with Carolina, because Carolina have a bunch of, you know, weapons. So hopefully... yeah, that's what I'm kind of, you know, a little bit of afraid of. But I don't know which way this is. But other than that, man, that's all I wanted to say, Chris.
Are you lost, Lou? Yeah, are you trying to figure out where you're going?
Yeah, I'm driving through the school, and I'm trying to pick up my little niece. And
okay.
I went to the wrong school.
All right,
yeah,
be safe.
Let's go Cavs, man.
All right, there you go, baby. I appreciate you. Thank you, Lou. All right. Take a timeout. We'll come back, and we're going to have a kind of a weird schedule over the next 15 minutes. We're taking it right up until 3:05. Charlie and Dave at that point. Nat's on deck. As I look out, it's getting a little bit cloudy. I hope the rain holds off so we can get some doubleheader baseball in. Guardians and the Nationals on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. All right, about 6 minutes until the top of the hour. We got a quick turnaround here, so we're not going to be able to do any more calls. Sorry, I just don't have the time. We still have Dumb Dumb of the Day. We're taking you up until 3:05. Charlie and Dave standing by about 10 and a half minutes or so from right now. Unfortunately, again, the weather getting a little bit dark outside. I hope the weather holds off so that they can get both of these games in. Don't forget, tomorrow's like a 12:05 game. No idea why they're playing so early. I mean, they play Wednesday afternoon games all the time. It's usually at 4:05. I'm not sure why it's at 12:05. I don't know if it's a kids thing or whatever they've got going on, but they've got it going on as well. I wanted to just, before we get to Dumb Dumb of the Day, I wanted to spend a couple of minutes. You guys know, you know, like, this radio show is a lot of sports. And, you know, sometimes it's about ball busting and, you know, we tease each other and we yell at each other. And it's usually all love, right? But sometimes it's about life, right? Sometimes it's about life. Today, May 6th, 2025, is my daughter Natalie's 21st birthday. She's my only daughter. She's a great person. She's a great teacher. She lives in Canton, Ohio. She's a great little sister, but she's really a big sister to Tyler, who's older, but because of his disabilities, needs a lot more care, a lot more attention, a lot more, I guess, foresight. Not foresight, that's not the right word. A lot more help than a typical, certainly, 23-year-old would need. And he'll be 24 coming up in about a month and a half time, and he'll be here with me. You know, 21 years ago, honestly, like, and I'll say this, when her mom and I found out, you know, that she was on the way, you know, we didn't know then what we should do. We already had a child with severe special needs, and we were worried. And we did do more testing. It wasn't an amniocentesis, but it was something else that could definitively tell us if she had a major, you know, issue going on before it was too late. And thankfully, she didn't. And everything went reasonably well as it could be expected. And I don't know what we would have done, honestly, if something like that happened. But I thank whoever I've got to thank that my daughter was born healthy and you know, that I've had her for the last 21 years. And she's battled a lot of things. She's a type 1 diabetic, has been for 11 years. She's tough. She's been through divorce. She's been through her stepdad passing away. She's been through all sorts of things. 3 grandmothers in 26 months. I mean, she's been through a lot. But she is tough. She is resilient. She's a great teacher. She loves little kids, loves working with them. Happy 21st birthday, baby. Love you. And, can't wait to see you and celebrate. I'm going up to Cleveland and Canton next Friday. So I'll be off for a couple of days, taking her to a concert, buying her first legal drinks. Also, happy birthday to my guy, Matt Paperno, who was born on the same day as Natalie 3 years earlier. And he is the son of my best friends, you know, Fred, Michelle, and you've heard me mention Fred before. Happy birthday to Matt, born on the same day as Natalie. So happy birthday to him, and I'm proud of him. He's going to SUNY Canton in the fall, so looking forward to that. So happy birthdays all around. We'll come back. Dumb Dumb of the Day, wrap it up before we get to Charlie and Dave next on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. All right, everybody, we got a boogie because we're getting out of here for Nats on Deck with Charlie and Dave. They're standing by in less than 2 minutes. Here is the Dumb Dumb of the Day. It's Tyreek Hill of the Miami Dolphins. Why? Well, he hasn't gotten arrested yet today. He hasn't been getting charged with anything yet today. He hadn't become a baby daddy again today. at least as far as we know. But he was recently asked to name his top five quarterbacks in the NFL. And he spoke the truth. He said Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Baker Mayfield. What? Joe Burrow. Okay. He spoke his version of the truth. Baker Mayfield is better than Tua Tagovailoa, in my opinion. Not in everybody's opinion. But, dude, how do you put Baker Mayfield over your own quarterback who's getting you the football, you dummy? What are you doing? Even if you have to lie, why would you answer that? And with Baker Mayfield? I like Baker Mayfield. What are you doing? Over Jaden Daniels? Come on now. Give me a break. Tyreek Hill, find something to do besides getting arrested and having another baby daddy situation or making a bad list of your top five quarterbacks. All right, Charlie and Dave are standing by. Nats on deck. A doubleheader coming up next on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. Nats and the Cleveland Guardians. Thanks to AMAC. Thanks to Mike Maniscalco for joining us. Go Caps, go Nats. Nationals baseball straight ahead on the Team 980.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.